Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 19th of June. Melinda Henneberger is our guest this hour, author of If They Only Listened to Us, What Women Voters Want Politicians to Hear. Melinda set out to listen to women soon after the 2004 election. She listened to women all over the country, as a matter of fact, on the major questions of our time. And some of the most interesting parts of the conversations, I think, are with friends of hers that she's had just for years and years and years. And they got together and talked about what they thought about politics. And she just asked, they got rolling on a lot of different issues, issues like immigration, issues of fairness, issues of war and peace and education and abortion. And she said that she learned some things from listening to women all over the country that both parties might like to know. She started in the Midwest, where national elections are so often decided, and she talked with women of all political persuasions. And it's a very interesting book because it's amazing, you know, what you can learn when you listen. She is a regular contributor to Slate. She is a political editor of the Huffington Post. She has worked for Newsweek magazine as a contributing editor and was a reporter for the New York Times for 10 years. And we'll be welcoming phone calls from Melinda. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050 for you to join our conversation. Hello, Melinda.
How are you?
I am okay. How are you?
Great.
Good. Let's start in Mount Carmel, Illinois. I mean, I love this group of women you've kept in touch with all these years. Yeah,
I love those girls.
And they're all
always be girls to me.
And they're all different political persuasions.
That's
and
right.
If you listen to them, you learn a lot.
You honestly do, don't you?
Yeah.
The funny thing was that here are these women. I mean, we've been friends in one case since fifth grade, and a couple of cases since freshman year of high school.
Hmm.
So we've been friends all these years, and yet politics had never come up. We got together a couple days after the United States invaded Iraq and had our first argument since high school after one of my friends suggested that we sing patriotic songs as we hiked along.
Oh, yeah.
in support of the troops. And before you know it, it's WMDs and the president, and I would have sworn we knew everything there was to know about each other, you know, having dissected every relationship in our lives, and yet we had never gone to the political, which in Washington, of course, would be unthinkable.
Mm-hmm.
If you've run into someone twice at the dry cleaners here, you probably know which way they lean. But what I learned talking to a lot of women across America is that my experience with my friends is not that unusual, that a lot of us really don't feel comfortable talking about this or shy away from it.
Mm-hmm. And so was that the issue that really got everybody riled up, or were there other issues, immigration, abortion?
The war. If there ever were any security moms, I think they really must have gone into some well-stocked bunker within moments of the election, because even in counties where, like Mount Carmel, Wabash County, Illinois, where Bush won 70-30, that's where I started, and right after the election, you could not find people, you know, who spoke positively about the war.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what I heard over and over across the country was that, if anything, a lot of people voted for Bush in 2004 despite the war. I think that those people, those women who found Bush the better protector on terror concerns, already have another political label, and it's Republican.
Mm.
Those women would have voted for him for 100 other reasons. I met lots of women who switched sides over the war and went from Bush to Kerry, Bush in 2000 to Kerry in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
But I really did not meet those security moms we heard so much about. Instead, the number one thing that first-time defectors from the Democratic Party mentioned was abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And my first response was, gosh, why would that be when Roe versus Wade was decided in 1973, why would somebody be peeling off from the Democrats over that issue now? And what, you know, the Catholic vote, I think, was crucial in this, in that there were several bishops who spoke out much more plainly than in any previous election cycle and really did have a lot to do with shifting that very crucial Catholic swing vote from Gore in 2000 to Bush in 2004. And a lot of these women really said that they ended up following the advice of these bishops, even when they were also angry at them for making these statements. The good news for Democrats was that they also said they had in no way found a cozy permanent home in the Republican Party. They would really like to find a way to come back. And they were pretty specific about what it would take for them to be able to do that.
How important was the moment, Melinda? You talk about those opposing abortion rights seeing the year 2004 as the chance of a lifetime to overturn the Roe v. Wade decision, because you've got Bush in the Oval Office, and you've got several spots in the Supreme Court likely to open up during the next term.
Right.
Was it that year? Was it because of that they voted for him again? Those who feel very strongly about this issue.
I think that was the case, and I think a lot of it was that Kerry was a Catholic, and so the Catholic Church made more of it. And I'm not sure it would have had the same strength had someone else had a non-Catholic Democrat been with the same position been running. And, you know, I've talked to pro-life Democrats who sort of take a perverse pride in the fact that Catholics denied a lifelong Catholic, the presidency. But at this point, things are to the point that I'm not sure any Democrat who's a Catholic could be elected at that level in this country.
Interesting. Well, let's talk at some length about this, the issue of abortion. You write that you're not sure the Democrats realize how many otherwise quite liberal pro-life women have switched parties, but they look for a way back to the Democrats with whom they agree on almost every other matter. But this is their only issue, and the Democrats, how do you think the Democrats could be more inclusive in this? Is there a way to be more inclusive?
See, the thing is that these are not, what I learned is, these are not your classic single-issue voters. You know, what the Democrats typically would say is, A, there are very few people who vote on this issue alone, which is true, and B, that there's nothing we can do to get these people back, which is not true. First of all, these are not your classic single-issue voter. These are women who say that when they hear themselves categorized as extremists by national Democrats, they don't, as one woman said, I agree with the Democrats on 90% of the issues, but if you're pro-life, they don't want you. And so there really is this feeling of, it's not that this is the only thing I'm voting on, it's if I feel this way, I don't feel comfortable in the party, I don't feel welcome in the party. And I think that that is very much something that the Democrats could change, A, by being more respectful toward diverse views on this issue, and in concrete terms, what that really boils down to is supporting more pro-life Democrats, you know, who have traditionally not been funded, even in cases where the result of that was the election of a far, far more conservative Republican who agreed with the Democrats on nothing. You know, so I think that there is a little more willingness to look at a candidate like that. For example, Bob Casey is the one everyone points to, who beat Rick Santorum in the senatorial race last year. But a party activist said to me the other day when I was talking to about this, she said, well, they have Bob Casey. What do they want? But I think it's that attitude of, you know, they want more than one that does kind of come across and speak to this, to why they might feel excluded.
But you also, now you tell me that they're not classically single-issue voters, and yet they are voting on the issue of abortion, right? Otherwise, why would you vote for a Republican if you're pretty liberal?
When I say they're not classic single-issue voters, I mean if they were strict I'm voting pro-life no matter what voters. They would not have waited until 2004 to peel off in the Democratic Party.
I see.
I mean, they are deep in your heart Democrats who, you know, cross their arms over their chest when they have to say the word Republican. They'd really rather vote Democratic, but more and more feel, as a combination, I think, of their perception of attitudes within the Democratic Party and more pressure from the church.
Mm-hmm. They also had a candidate, and this is, you write a lot about this in the book, that women, a lot of women couldn't abide John Kerry, that he tended to look down on middle-class Americans.
Right. I really started to feel protective of him after a while, because, boy, you know, women would just say, just had an kind of instinctive dislike for him. And that sort of thing is almost impossible to overcome, you know, because you can't, when you have a candidate who's not perceived as likable, who people don't warm to, you can't win on the issues alone. And that may be unfortunate, but it's the case. And what I worry about for Democrats in 08 is, you know, they came so close in 2000 with a candidate who, though hailed as a hero now, was not seen as that likable in 2000. Same story in 04. And I really wonder with Hillary Clinton whether they, if they chose her, whether they would be trying to see if third time was the charm. And I'm not sure it would be.
Oh, that's interesting. So she has the same kind of holier than thou.
She has such deep negative. You know, I began, it's with Hillary, it's visceral and it's strategic. There are so many women who, I began to dread the moment her name would come up. And this whole process was the opposite of a poll. I did not even ask specific questions. It was very open-ended. It was more, it was not Hillary Clinton up or down. It was, what are you thinking about 08? So it's quite possible that only the no vote came out. But the no was so vitriolic and across the spectrum. You know, once Hillary Clinton's name came up, I was in for a long airing of unhappiness about her. And there was, I have to say, at least as much vitriol on the left as on the right at this point, mostly over her support of the war and her reluctance to say that she felt her vote authorizing the war was a mistake. And those women in the center, who I think are crucial to her election, just have the feeling that she's not entirely authentic, that what you see is not necessarily what you get, that she would say whatever she felt required.
Right.
And that's pretty hard to reposition yourself out of.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We had Carl Bernstein on yesterday. I thought he was kind of funny because he was saying, well, you know, he was taking credit for the fact that he thought his book and the other book that came out about her in the last few weeks, he wanted to take credit, I think, for a change in her strategy, that she is working to be much more authentic, which, you know, I don't know if I've seen that or not, but I thought it was interesting that he was taking credit for a change in her.
Well, I think that's something she's been shooting for quite some time, but I think those efforts might be counterproductive.
Yeah, interesting. What about John Edwards? You have a chapter in the book about John Edwards. What about women and John Edwards, and what were your thoughts about whether or not he was authentic, he was listening to women?
That certainly, he got a lot of credit for that in 04.
Yeah.
We'll see how that works this time as the campaign goes on. That's certainly a plus for him, that people do feel he listens to them, that they really feel heard when he speaks. And in fact, I would think that really, and his ability to talk to the average person, to, you know, whereas Kerry was right or wrong, perceived as as elitist and condescending, that certainly is not the feeling you get from John Edwards.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Because he's a real wealthy guy, too.
Yeah, and I think that $400 haircut did hurt him.
Right.
But it's not how much money you have. I mean, the Bushes are certainly more Kenny Bunkport than Crawford.
Yes,
and
yes.
And yet, Daddy Bush knew what he was doing when he started hanging out, you know, with the Gatlin brothers and
right.
You you know.
Right,
and,
right.
And those pork rinds, remember?
Yeah.
I mean.
Right, right.
People really want to be able to identify with their president. And I think it's partly because if you don't have a lot of time to focus on the specifics of the issue, or maybe you don't feel competent to do that, then you want to figure out, is this a person of faith? Is a shortcut for figuring out, okay, this is a person I trust to take the wheel if I'm not paying close attention,
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
at least that this is a person that I feel comfortable with and that I trust. That's
mm-hmm.
that's just so important.
Yeah.
And what about factor in Elizabeth Edwards? Yeah,
right.
I rave about her, but I just think that she is, boy, she's the one who listens to women, who listens to everybody. Figure
right.
in, please, her horrible news about the recurrence
right.
of the breast cancer. How he handles this on the trail, whether or not we. We're drawn to them because of this. To talk about her a bit and what the women, and I'm sure that some people brought her up and brought him up, what were they saying?
She's extraordinary. I mean, you do hear some people say, and I think they're in the minority, that she's, you know, doing this because she feels she has to or because he's forcing her. I think anyone who would say that is not too familiar with Elizabeth Edwards.
Right, right.
I don't think she would ever do that. And she believes so strongly in her husband and in their life's work. Of course, it's not just him. This is a life that they've built together. And it's one that she's so committed to that I personally, and I'm a cancer survivor also, cannot think of anything that would be worse for her health than to abandon that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the driving force in her life and
yeah.
their lives.
Right.
So, and you just hear, you know, amazing support for her decision. But, you know, is that enough? He has said, and I believe, that he wouldn't want there to be a sympathy vote either. I don't think that she would decide people's impression of his electability one way or the other. She can only be an asset, however,
right.
because she is somebody who really does bring people together.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't she, though? I mean, talk about somebody who just treats everybody with respect. You know, there's not no highfalutin, no removed
not at
from
all.
Common person at all. She's just right there with people. She is extraordinary. I know you had breast cancer. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Thanks.
Good. Good. That's good. That's good. And we'll talk about healthcare too and how that figures in a moment. What about this? As you talk to women, the president's approval ratings are down in the toilet. We got this war that
right.
a lot of people are very upset about. What did the people who switched from the Democrats or those people who voted for Bush in 2004, did you feel that there was a great deal of disappointment that what they saw wasn't what they got?
Oh, absolutely. But the first surprise was how many people who voted for him were not happy Bush fans right after they did so. You know, the almost heartbreaking thing for the Democrats was how dissatisfied with Bush they were right after the election. Again, in these places that were very, very red, who went for Bush 70-30,
yeah.
you barely heard a kind word for the man weeks after the election. And I really got so many negative views on the war from Republican Bush backers. So what I think one of the things that means, though, is that for Democrats who are saying, and I hear them say this every day, that, oh, whoever we nominate now after the disaster of the Bush years is a cinch. You know, someone told me the other day
mm-hmm.
we could nominate Donald Duck and it, no problem. No, not quite, because there are so many women who said they could not think of a single thing Bush had done right in his two terms. They are furious over the war and much more. And yet, when you would say, okay, so does that mean you're more likely to vote for a Democrat in 08? Oh, no. Of course not. Why would that be? I wouldn't blame Bush's failures on someone else in his party. I will vote on the specific candidate.
Uh-huh.
So I think that depending on Who's chosen? What, is the Democrat going to be someone who voted to authorize the war? Is the Republican going to be someone who's been critical of the war? I'm not sure that that is going to be the, even though there is deep and wide opposition to the war, I don't think anyone would argue otherwise, I'm not sure that's going to make it a cakewalk for the Democrats.
Well, then how do you explain the midterms?
Well, the midterms were the perfect storm for the Republican Party. That was the war. That was corruption. That was Jack Abramoff. By the time we got down to Mark Foley IMing these underage pages, you started to think, you know, even if God is a Democrat, he's laying it on kind of thick. But a lot of people, for a lot of these women I talked to, it was sort of they came home for the midterms, but the bags are still in the hall unpacked. In that, I think, too, that the presidential is much more, especially on the right, perceived as this rolling referendum on abortion rights.
Interesting.
Than the midterms.
We're going to take phone calls. Melinda Henneberger is our guest. Her book is If They Only Listen to Us, What Women Voters Want Politicians to Hear. She spoke with hundreds of women all over the country and, you know, wasn't polling in any way, just conversations with former homeless women, with friends of hers she had known since elementary school, with women from Massachusetts and from New Orleans and Fort Worth and Mount Carmel, Illinois, and all over the country, Tampa, Florida, to find out what women were thinking about politics. And thus the book. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Milwaukee area callers, get a hold of us at 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for Melinda, and I'm starting with Nancy from West Bend. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for your outstanding work on behalf of the candidates and all of us. I am a very big fan of Hillary's. I actually share a birthday with her, and I'm the same age, but I'm painting a room today, and she's trying to run the country, so it's a little different scenario. But I have two things. One of them is just a side little note, and that is that I'm really tired of this having to be a beauty contest and that sort of thing. I would really wish that if people would listen to what she has to say, how ready she would be to run the country with her level of experience, we'd be very happy with her as a president. But second of all, throughout this entire election process, which is so long and protracted, when and why haven't we so far heard any talk about who the candidates are going to use for vice presidential candidates with them? The vice president at this particular administration has caused so many problems and so much trouble. How come we never hear about that?
I think, first, to your point about the beauty contest, obviously our democracy would be much better off if more people got involved in the issues and knew more about them and took the trouble to do that. But honestly, a lot of people do vote on kind of a gut feeling. And true, we see where gut feelings have gotten our current administration. On the vice presidential choice, I think that any candidate at this point would hesitate to be drawn into a conversation like that because they don't want to seem like they think they've got it in the bag. So I think reporters would love to be talking about that, but candidates would probably be wise to put that off for as long as possible.
Thank you. I think we ought to spend a few more minutes talking about Hillary because she is the front runner here, and I don't think that I've asked you to go into more detail about what this antipathy toward her is. What does it stem from? Is it stand by your guy, or is it,
you
what
know,
is it?
You know, it's not. To the extent that her husband is a factor, I think he is an unmitigated plus. I have heard, especially in the African-American community, you know, raves for him. I wish I could vote for Bill again,
yep.
But next best possibility, vote for Hillary. And I really have not heard. A lot of people ask me if it's about the relationship, but I honestly don't. When I say that it's a gut feeling, it's really impossible to explain. You know, it's the same reason that I would hear from people, oh, my number one issue is the environment or healthcare or choice. And then they would say, oh, but they voted against the candidate who agreed with them on that. And I started to think that it's almost like dating. It's like, you know, you have your list of everything you want in the man, and then you fall for someone who has nothing that's on the list. You know, it's like your friend who says she's looking for a guy who's a solid citizen, and she can find the out-of-work landscape artist in the room blindfolded. So some of it is just an instinct that we could never explain.
Yeah.
And with Hillary, I think that, look at everything she's been through as First Lady and since in her public and private life. It has not been an easy road for her.
No.
And if she's careful, gosh, anyone who had been through what she's been through would be careful. But I think that probably learned instinct to parse her words pretty darn carefully might work against her.
Yeah.
That authenticity.
Contrast that with Kitty Dukakis. You spent some time with her, and what an interesting time the two of you had. She is, But talk about being direct about things. There she is.
Well, of course, she can afford to be because she's so far off the public stage now. But it was very interesting to talk to her and to talk about how, you know, her experience was that people say they want candid, unvarnished reactions, but, you know, a lot of people love Laura Bush, and I'm not sure we've ever had one of those from her. So I feel that the country doesn't know her well at all, admires her, but doesn't have a real handle on who she is. With Kitty Dukakis, it was just so interesting because, you know, something that that LBJ said was that Americans will forgive you for anything except being weak. And you certainly saw that with Mike Dukakis, that this perception, which came from his refusal to tear this, you know, non-existent rapist in a debate limb from limb, you know, when he was asked in the presidential debate, what would you do if your wife were raped? Would you then think that that person should receive capital punishment? And his answer was, I don't know word for word, but no, I don't believe in capital punishment. And going into sort of his standard response on his beliefs on capital punishment, instead of what the crowd wanted, which was, I'd tear him limb from limb,
I'd
hang him from the highest tree.
Right.
But that perception of weakness was really what did Michael Dukakis in, and was the end of his campaign, even though the reality, as his wife told me, was here's a man who could not possibly have been more supportive of his wife in real life through some really tough stuff through her addiction.
Right. But she knew, she knew right off the bat when she heard him say that, what that meant, didn't she?
She said, he looked at me sitting in the audience and knew he had driven off a cliff.
Yeah. Let's go to Kathy from Wapaka next. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I heard a little bit of your conversation about the Catholic vote, and I'd like to tell you basically why I'm an ex-Catholic. One of the last times I went to Mass in the year 2000, a visiting priest was giving a sermon, and basically he was just all over Clinton and Gore and how evil their administration was because they supported federal funding for stem cell research and because they supported reproductive choice. I'm going to have to cut this short. I got a music lesson. But, I decided then that I wasn't sure I wanted to belong to a faith where they were going to tell me how to vote. I think I'll just end it at that.
All right, Kathy, thanks for the call.
You know, I always thought that the best thing that could have happened to John Kerry would have been if he actually had been denied communion, as some thought he should be, because then I think people would really have reacted to that happening to him, because people in Catholics overwhelmingly disagreed with the idea that the communion rail is something like, you know, the checkout counter where they have the list of people with bad checks you can't take. You know, no, that is not a widely held view. People mm-hmm. will tell you again and again that, you know, Jesus would not have turned anyone away from the meal. And this is not something that the average Catholic in the pew wanted to see happen. So had one of these priests who feels the same way that the caller's visiting priest feels actually turned him away, I think that would have actually worked in his favor.
Yeah. Maria is next from La Crosse. Hi, Maria.
Hi.
Hi.
You had talked a lot about the women who left the Democratic camp over the pro-life issue.
Mm-hmm.
I would just like to address, I am kind of stuck in the Republican camp because of the pro-life issue. I mean, it's the same thing, but the other side of the coin. I think that I know a lot of women, and quite frankly men, who feel as though they are socially more Democratic,
mm-hmm.
But they're stuck because
exactly.
the Democratic Party will not give us any pro-life candidates.
That's one of the major, major points of this book, is that there are so many people who feel that way, who feel that when it comes to poverty, who feel that when it comes to immigration, when it comes to virtually every other issue, they are Democrats, they are not happy Republicans, and yet they just don't feel that the Democrats will throw them a crumb.
Exactly.
And that's yeah. something that I think the Democratic Party really does have to come to terms with.
Mm. So if you, Maria, so if you were, let's anticipate the 2008, let's just say that we got John Edwards and we got, who've we got on the Republican side? We've got, let's say we got Brownback. Would you, on the basis of that issue then, considering that the pro-life platform would be a part of the Democratic agenda and it would be the opposite on the Republican side, would that be the determining issue for you?
Well, it's hard to say one way or the other without knowing all the specifics. I think that I honestly would be pretty hard-pressed to believe the Democrats if they just all of a sudden came out with a pro-life candidate. I would think, let's see that in action first, because I do think that they're starting to get it, and maybe they would just, I mean, I think even Hillary Clinton has kind of softened her stance on the pro-life issue to make it seem like she's a little bit more, I'm not so against pro-life issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, just to say carte blanche, yeah, I would switch over. I wouldn't switch that fast, but I do think that the Democrat Party needs to see that, you know, there's a group of people out there that are stuck going, we don't know who to vote for anymore.
Hmm.
Quite frankly, those of us in the Republican Party don't feel that the Republicans have delivered on their pro-life stance either.
Mm-hmm.
We feel like everybody says they're pro-life and nobody does anything about it.
See, that's the thing, is they have, this issue has been very, very good to the Republican Party, but what have they delivered after years and years of promises?
Well, that's interesting.
So I question, and certainly a lot of women I talk to question, whether this president, given that he said when he campaigned that he doesn't think the country is ready to overturn Roe v. Wade, given that his wife and mother and now I guess one of his daughters has come out as pro-choice, how committed is he to this? It has certainly worked very, very well for him politically.
Yeah. And what about the, thanks very much for the call. I'm really glad you called, Maria. It was an interesting bit of insight. What about the whole platform of pro-life? What about the women when they were talking about, we met brought up Dukakis and the death penalty. What about the death penalty?
Well, these voters I'm talking about will definitely say, you know, why isn't my bishop talking about how it's not pro-life to be pro-capital punishment?
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't my bishop talking about it's not pro-life for us to be in Iraq? So that's all part of the mind. You know, those voters are liberal, what we think of as liberal on those issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also say on some of the other social issues, for example, gay marriage, stem cell research. Those issues have nowhere near the power abortion has with the kind of voter I'm talking about.
Yeah. Corey from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Oh, I'm really enjoying your show this morning. My question was actually two questions. I'm trying to, I'm an African-American male, and I get into conversations with some of my good girlfriends, and some of them say that even though Hillary is seemingly qualified and lined up, that the conversation is, but I'd never vote for her because that would make her too powerful. Is there an underlying conversation between women that we want a successful woman, or but not too successful? I don't know. I question that. If I started off as an Obama fan, and I still am, but I'm really inspired by Hillary, and she seems to have the qualifications and the, you know, the road experience, so to speak. I was just wondering if that was part of your questioning, if, and also kind of what is the on Obama, what is the feel racially? Are African-American women feeling really comfortable with him, or is he a good crossover? and then I'll take my answers off.
Thanks, Corey.
First, I don't think I interviewed any of your girlfriends.
You never know. Were you here?
Well, the reason I say that is that I did not hear that sentiment that he was talking about, that you know, do we really want a woman to be that powerful? Hmm. I have to say that when I hear Hillary Clinton say, there are some people who say we're not ready for a woman in the White House, I didn't hear women say that. Across the political spectrum, on the contrary, I heard the most conservative women say, I'd love to see Condi get a shot at it, for example.
Yeah, interesting.
So I really didn't hear that, that gender-based you know, that being a disqualifier. You certainly, there's at least this stereotype that, oh, women are always hardest on, you know, we're hardest on our own. I hope that isn't true, and I don't think it is true. I think that the point is that women are ready for a woman in the White House, that women would prefer a woman in the White House, but that it's not an automatic that any woman running for the White House would get our vote. And I think that's the same way with Obama and African Americans. Is it a plus? You bet. Is it an automatic? No. And so African American women I spoke to, you know, were divided on it too, just like everybody else.
You talk about being struck by the strength of opposition to gay marriage among the African American women that you were speaking to.
Mm-hmm. That was a surprise for me. Hmm. I was very taken aback by the strength of opposition to gay marriage in that community. And also by the way the fairness argument played, which was not well at all. You know, they would say things like, you know, don't you dare mention civil rights and gay rights in the same sentence. That's not the same thing. And that's offensive to me to even hear that comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it was, the most surprising part was one woman said to me, you know, anything that takes men out of the marriage pool, we're opposed to. Hmm. In other words, this idea, partly because, you know, this whole down-low phenomenon of hidden bisexuality, that, and because there are more women than men in the marriage pool, because there are so many in that community who are incarcerated, that there really was this feeling that I hadn't expected of competition.
Hmm. Interesting. That's very interesting. Let's pause for a moment. We'll return and take more phone calls. Melinda Henneberger is our guest, and her book is If They Only Listened to Us, What Women Voters Want Politicians to Hear. She spent quite a bit of time soon after the 2004 election visiting with women all over the country and hearing their viewpoints on the major questions of our time. And we're finding out what she heard this hour of our show. More phone calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number is 800-486-8655, and we go to Gussie from Madison next. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead.
Thank you. I just heard you, Melinda, address the issue of the African-American vote and Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to know if you would elaborate just a bit on the feeling you got from your the women you interviewed who were not women of color, what they thought of Obama.
Very enthusiastic. And, of course, you also hear people say, yeah, but what they do in the voting booth, let's wait and see. And that's, of course, true. But I will tell you, I heard a lot of enthusiasm from some pretty conservative quarters, some women I would not have expected to say, I'll tell you who could bring me back to the Democratic Party, Barack Obama.
Isn't it? Now, why is that? That's interesting.
You know what I heard? I'm thinking right now of this one woman who grew up as a Democrat in Westchester County in New York, who grew up knocking on doors for the League of Women Voters with her mom, a very Democratic family, has become a Republican, I think mostly over fiscal issues, although she just feels turned off to the whole, you know, what she sees as the entitlements of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
And for her, she said, Obama, to me, is not trying to play the disenfranchised minority. He represents the best of this country and how you come here and work hard and make something. He makes me feel hopeful. The feeling that you get from a lot of pretty conservative women is, you know, here's someone who could do what Bush promised to do and didn't, which is really be a uniter and not a divider. That's the number one thing that I hear.
Oh, that's interesting. Gussie, what do you think?
I agree. I feel that he does bring hope, and he doesn't seem to be as connected, as tied up in the political rigmarole that goes on in Washington,
right,
since he is newer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I tend to agree with that as well. And I also want to say, with Hillary, you know, I think it would be great to have a woman. But I really do just sense something. I don't feel about her the way I did about Bill. And it's not that I think a woman would be too powerful. I just, every once in a while, she kind of lets me see the real, what I think is the real her. Mm-hmm. And I'm not too happy with that. So if it weren't Barack for me, it would probably be Edwards instead of Hillary. I think she would be third for me. But thank you.
Yeah, thanks,
Gussie. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for the call. Well, you've been listening. Where do you think the Democrats are going to go, Melinda?
You know, this is such a wide-open election.
It is, really, isn't it?
On both sides. And I'm not even sure we've met the Republican yet who's going to be the nominee.
Mm-hmm.
When I hear people say the social conservatives are warming to Rudy Giuliani, I wonder in what universe that could be possible.
Right, I know.
But, you know, if were the Republicans to choose Giuliani or any other pro-choice candidate, that would be a gift to the Democratic Party, which is why I don't think they'll do that. One reason, because were abortion off the table, that really would be, that would make it as close to the cakewalk that some people already think it is in 08. But who, you know, so much can happen. And with, this is not only wide open, but it's a bunch of untested, you know, we haven't had a major woman candidate before. We haven't had a leading African-American candidate before. We haven't had someone in the health situation that, you know, Edwards' family is dealing with right now. So there are so many unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Obama being so untested, of course, could step in it in a major way at any time, as any of the other candidates could. You know, I went to the march in Selma a couple months ago, the commemorative Bloody
Sunday
march.
Oh, you did.
Where
huh.
Hillary and Obama and, of course, Bill, too, spoke. It was a beautiful day. And I heard a woman in the crowd say, you know, I just hope Obama can get through the, you know, all these many, many months without making a mistake. And I thought, well, gosh, if that's the standard, I mean,
exactly, it's pretty high, isn't it?
let's not make this absolutely impossible, especially given that there's nothing like a presidential run. I mean, there's really nothing like running on that level.
Mm-hmm. Give me a sense, because I know that you talked about this, and There aren't many people who are addressing this issue, but the women that you talked with whose jobs have been downsized, who are feeling
right.
this economic pinch, is this a big issue among women in the country right now? And do they see any candidates responding to an economic squeeze they find themselves in?
It's a huge issue. And I think, you know, what I said earlier about how for a lot of people, it's the decision is made on an instinctive, intuitive basis. The other thing, though, that's true is that the more I listened, often something that didn't make sense to me, that seemed irrational to me off the top, the longer I listened, the more sense it made. And on the globalization issue, for example, I talked to some women in Ohio who were unemployed factory workers who had been, you know, their jobs weren't coming back. They had taken other jobs if they'd been lucky enough to find them at half the pay. Were very much struggling voting Republican. And so your first reaction is, But, you know, what they'd say is, once I couldn't see any difference in the trade, in the position toward trade.
Hmm.
On the Republican or the Democratic side, that's when I started voting on social issues.
Mm.
So I think that could potentially be quite a powerful thing for John Edwards,
yes.
because he is the one, of course, who for some time has had a different position on that.
Yes.
And even though, yes, he's been pro-trade, he certainly has taken up the mantle of the working person.
Right. Thanks for the call, Gussie. Let's go next to Frank from Madison. Hi.
Hello. Thank you very much for your guest. And, you know, as a mere male, I'm still a little intimidated.
Oh, you're a good caller always, Frank. Don't worry about yourself.
Well, but I'm going to, not only am I male, I have a question for your guest in that when I find myself judging the political temperature of the country and where and what responses should be, I'm always wrong. So I have two questions and two judgments. To me, do the Republican women have a great discontent with where the Republican Party is and where the nation is, as distinct from a really distaste for George Bush? And then second, are the women in the country waiting for the Democrats to actually stand up for something and offer a genuine rather than rhetorical alternative to the Republicans?
Yeah.
And so I think that both should be true, so it's probably not the case, and I'll give you the line. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank, for your call.
First, are a lot of women in the Republican Party, too, waiting for the Democrats to step up? Of course. I think a lot of Democrats are waiting for Democrats to step up. I think that to this day, there's a lot of Democrat-on-Democrat rage out there that the party hasn't done a better job of providing a clear alternative to the disaster of the Bush years. Do Republican women have different kinds of discontents with the party? Of course, that depends which women. Naturally, we're not a monolith politically or any other way, but I heard some of that. I heard some, you know, old boy kind of discontents. But most of it really did seem to center around Bush, which is why I'm wondering if they, you know, those kind of discontents would be transitory, would depend in a way they still might prefer a Republican once he's off the stage.
One more call, one more minute left. Doug from Saner, hi.
Hi. Well, my question is that... And maybe he's not even in the running anymore because I hear so little about Al Gore. But as I remember, when he was vice president, people seemed to like his wife. And you were talking earlier about some of the running mates' spouses.
Mm-hmm.
But how do women look at Al Gore? I mean, I would love to see an Al Gore back in the race for the presidency.
All right, I need to hold you there because we're so short on time, Doug. What about Al?
I heard a lot about Al Gore, and in fact, again, from some pretty conservative women who said, I cannot believe I'm saying this, but, you know, I'm giving Al Gore a new look. I'd sure love to see him get in the race. And seeing all he's been through and how he's come through what happened to him and what he's accomplished after this really devastating, traumatic experience as a plus. I heard every day I wish Al Gore would run, and I still do. So I don't think people, and I think that is some of the uncertainty, Hillary, Obama, Edwards, is that a lot of people really are still waiting to see what Gore's going to do. And
thank you. Thanks, Melinda, so much. Thanks. It was great. Melinda Henneberger, and her book is If They Only Listen to Us, What Women Voters Want Politicians to Hear, very recently published by Simon & Schuster. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing this hour, and to Sherome Owens for on-air production here in Milwaukee. This show will repeat at 10 o'clock tonight for those of you who want to tell somebody about it, and or if you want to, you missed it or you only heard a few minutes, you want to hear the whole darn thing, it's tonight at 10. Thanks for listening and calling. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.